I'm going back in time a little bit to my PhD work at Purdue, which wrapped up in 2005. I'm Dr. Al Fournier, currently at the University of Arizona, where I work with the Arizona Pest Management Center. And I'm, as I say, kind of going back in time. I think this will fit right in nicely with the session. I had the opportunity when Dawn asked me about participating in this to go back to my dissertation work and dig a little deeper. And I want to talk today about some case study work that I did in implementation of IPM in Indiana schools. I think Tom covered very nicely the why part of this question with IPM in schools, so I'm just going to breeze through this a little bit. But basically, in a school IPM program, the major focus, of course, is on sanitation and exclusion. And one of the key differences is that implementation of a proactive monitoring program replaces preventative routine pesticide use in the schools, which is where we were not so many years ago. When an action needs to be taken to control a pest, there's a preference, of course, for baits and low-risk types of approaches. At the time that I conducted my study, around 2002, there were 13 states that had passed legislation mandating the use of IPM in schools, and another four states, I believe, that had legislation recommending schools adopt IPM programs. Now I think the number is up to 15 states that mandate it. In any case, I want to point out on this slide a couple of things. First of all, notice that Indiana does not require the use of IPM in schools by law. In our state, we had a political process, though, really, that was pushing very hard for voluntary adoption. Basically, school districts were told if they didn't adopt a pest management policy that they were going to pursue legislation in the state. So that was really an opportunity for Purdue to begin an extension program in that area. And that's what I worked in. Now, I wanted to start out by presenting a couple of different perspectives on IPM. One major perspective that a lot of you share here is as technical experts in IPM. And to us, IPM is a data-driven, science-based process for making decisions about pest management. To the policymakers, it is also, you know, it's also a focus on reducing pests, but a little more emphasis on reducing pesticides and pesticide exposure. And Green and Breisch have a very nice article from 2003 where they kind of contrast these two perspectives and talk about how really a technical doctrine has kind of become a policy in the U.S. I want to add one more circle to that, which is the adopter's perspective. One of the things, if you delve into the literature of adoption of innovations, Roger's work, you find that people's opinions and their ideas and their knowledge certainly influence the way that they adopt and implement technologies. So today I want to present an adopter's perspective of IPM in schools, and I want to take you into four school districts in Indiana where I did in-depth case studies during my PhD work. I'm going to start by presenting some background on the Indiana program, our extension program for IPM in schools, present my objectives and methods for the case study, and I want to, the fun part is to provide you with very brief thumbnail sketches of each of the four school districts and what those programs looked like, and then a cross-case analysis where I tried to draw out what were some of the major factors that affected the implementation of those IPM programs. And I will close by talking a little bit about what I think in terms of the implications of these case studies for those that are involved in school IPM education. So I started my work at Purdue. I came into a PhD program in 2000, and initially my major focus was just on building an extension IPM program based for IPM in schools. So I was school IPM coordinator there from 2000 to 2004. We implemented some IPM pilot programs that Sherry talked about, and Mark Lame was involved in that process as well. During the time I was there, we conducted a lot of workshops, developed an IPM manual, publications. We had a major website, the IPM Technical Resource Center, which is still an active website. I estimate that I trained about 1,600 school personnel which represented 65% of the school districts. And most of our programs were funded by EPA and by the Indiana Department of Environmental Management. Well, I didn't initially arrive at Purdue with my research questions in hand. It was during my time in this extension program that I started to develop those questions. What I wondered about in talking to school administrators, I realized a lot of things can affect their decisions to adopt programs, and a lot of things can also affect how those programs get implemented. So that kind of led to me developing my research questions, which were basically, what are the factors affecting adoption and implementation of IPM in schools? And then once a program is implemented, what does that program really look like? The adoption side of this is really interesting, and because of time today, I'm really going to kind of hone in and focus on the implementation of those programs. Be happy to talk about adoption if anyone has an interest in that later. My overall research study involved two major components. One was a statewide survey of school pest management policies and practices, and the second component was the four case studies, which I'll be talking about today. This, you know, there's several definitions of what a case study is. I like this definition. It's from the Government Accounting Office and a handbook they have on program evaluation techniques. It's really a methodology for studying the specific. That's kind of the way that I think of it. Rather than generalizing, doing random sampling as we're often doing in science, the goal of a case study is to get an in-depth understanding of the particular. And in this is arrived at through developing extensive description and analysis. So really this is a qualitative research method that I had to employ in this, and it wasn't something I arrived at Purdue with a great knowledge of. I was very fortunate that I had some schoolwork. I had two semesters in qualitative data analysis, and I had a really great professor there at Purdue. Dr. Donna Anderson served on my committee and helped me through this stuff. I found myself very quickly interested and fascinated in qualitative research, so happy to share some of this with you today. The objectives of my study were, first of all, to define the pest management goals of the participants, because I believe that the goals of the adopters are going to influence the program. To document their pest management policies and practices from multiple perspectives, and to identify the factors that influenced both the policy adoption and the implementation. And finally, I wanted to go and look at those programs, the reality of school IPM as it's implemented, and compare that to kind of our academic standards for IPM. My methodology in this, I selected four case schools, and I started with my data from the survey to identify schools that were kind of at a low range, middle range, high range, and then I followed up with telephone interviews. It was a selective sampling with the goal of kind of representing the IPM continuum. I had no success in getting those schools at the low end to participate in the study and sign off on all the IRB documents and everything else. So I ended up with schools that were kind of from the middle range to the high range based on those preliminary phone surveys. I interviewed a total of 26 subjects, and those were mainly school operations personnel and administrators, as well as the pest management service providers working in those school districts. I did not interview any teachers or any parents, and that's probably important in looking at the results. In addition to the interviews, I did detailed assessments of four different schools within each of those districts, and that included IPM inspections and pest management service observations. This was fun. I got to follow the pest professional around during a routine service, watch what they were doing and ask them questions. And then I also analyzed documents related to the program. I'd like to present my theoretical framework for the study. I really started with the Rogers Diffusion of Innovations model, and there's just a couple things I want to point out on this. Diffusion, of course, how many of you are familiar with Rogers' work? Some of you are familiar with that. Diffusion really refers to the adoption and spread of a technology through any social system. One component of that, of course, is the individual adoption decision process, and that's called the Innovation Decision Process Model. That served as a guideline for me to develop questions. This model talks about the prior conditions and how those can influence an adoption decision. And then it identifies these five steps related to adoption of any technology, the steps that a person passes through in making a decision to adopt. We'll focus today mainly on this implementation step here. But what I did was I developed an interview instrument that was based on these components of Roger's model, and I used open-ended questions. My goal was that this would allow the actual participants' perspectives to emerge. And I used a technique called grounded theory analysis in analyzing the data. Grounded theory is the idea that it's basically a standardized coding procedure for identifying different information and concepts out of the data and then developing assertions. I'll explain that in just a moment. For the implementation phase, I relied not only on the interviews but also on the IPM assessments that I talked about, the pest management service observations, the IPM inspections. So I used multiple data sources in order to kind of create a descriptive reality of each school district. And then I compared that to this, what I call the academic IPM standard. And for that standard, I used the IPM Institute's standards for IPM in schools. My qualitative data analysis basically involved going through those, transcribing those interviews, reviewing them, and going through and coding the data. This is a process where you identify specific concepts that are identified by the participants, and a particular concept, for an example, might be pest management satisfaction. And that gets defined and redefined and generalized as it's encountered by other participants as you go through the data, until you've got these concepts that are general enough that you can kind of compare across cases. The second step in that is called axial coding, where you identify either chronological or causal relationships between the individual concepts. And through this process, you're able to develop assertions based on the data. As I mentioned, I used multiple data sources to try to get at the reality of those programs. And I'll just mention two major limitations of this type of work. One is the problem with observations. People do behave differently when they're being observed. And that's obviously well documented. But the interesting thing to me was, if this is how they behave when I'm watching, you know, I wonder how they're behaving when no one's watching at all. Still came to some interesting findings through that. The other important point is you cannot really generalize. This is, again, a study of the specific, so you can't necessarily generalize the conclusions. So I'm going to just get to my case study results. First, I've got a couple of tables that compare the four districts, and then I'll talk about each district in the specific. Just a couple things I want to point out here, and the school districts here labeled A through D. All of the school districts I worked with had a pest management policy in place. None of those policies specifically mentioned the use of IPM. However, interestingly, all of the school administrators viewed those as IPM policies, and they viewed those as the beginning of their IPM programs. I think this is in part because we used that sort of political drive of having schools adopt a policy to present our IPM and get people to buy in. In any case, all of the schools did employ various IPM strategies, including most of the schools had some kind of a monitoring program in place or inspections. One school district did not, and I'll talk about that a little bit more later. There was a lot of variation in their non-chemical practices, as you can see there. Insecticide use. The primary insecticides used inside of the schools were Bates. There was one school district that didn't employ Bates at all. Only one of the schools used routine pesticide applications, and that was a twice a year perimeter treatment to keep the bugs out. And a couple of the school districts used pesticides remedially, usually very judiciously in that way. I did identify three out of the four school districts that did not allow any school staff to use pesticides as part of the policy. However, in two of those school districts, I found examples of unauthorized pesticide use. I'm sure Tom is not surprised by that. And in the remaining school districts, school custodians were authorized to use pesticides only after cleaning, sanitation, and exclusion, and that was pretty strictly enforced. I think there's really two measures of success when you look at evaluating these programs, and one was to see, did they meet the expectations and the pest management goals of the people that participated in the study? And the second measure, of course, is our academic standard for IPM. It's interesting to note that these are not always consistent, and you'll see a little bit more as I talk about each district. I've kind of given these districts little nicknames to kind of help you latch on to something, and the nicknames really refer to kind of the mentality and the management style of the central office. In the guidance school district, they had a site-based management type of setup where the school principals were king in their school. So the central administrator who was trying to administer an IPM program really had to use persuasive techniques to try to get the schools on board. And they were pretty effective at this. They would provide them with resources related to IPM and try to do what training they could. They couldn't get the teachers involved in the training. But they worked very closely with the schools, and usually that guiding management style was pretty effective. In this school district, I found that education and also active roles in the pest management program really engaged the staff and increased the buy-in. They had weekly custodian meetings, and every week they'd mention something about the IPM program, and that seemed to help. The pest management provider at the school, she was just terrific. She actually had a background in building engineering, and also she had been a volunteer for the Cancer Society for many years. So she had a very personal belief system that drove her program, and that was that pesticides can potentially harm people. I want to reduce those. And she also came from a knowledgeable perspective as far as non-chemical recommendations. She also communicated her recommendations at the school level and at the central district level, and that seemed to be highly effective. This was actually perceived as a very successful program overall. There was kind of one or two people that were a little less satisfied with the program, and that's where the unauthorized pesticide use came in, was in one of these schools. But overall, it really was pretty close to many of the components of an IPM program, as we talk about. The Mandate School District is the next one. And in this school district, IPM really came down from on high as a major mandate. It was an administrative mandate. The program was influenced by a school board member that basically pushed them into it. They dragged their feet as long as possible because the director of buildings and grounds was convinced IPM was going to cost him. And in fact, he was right. The program costs increased when they adopted IPM. In this school district, there was a dichotomous management structure, and this was actually true in all four school districts, that the one chain of command was the central operations down to the custodians in the school building, but the teachers were in a completely separate chain of command, and they answered to the school principal and then up to the superintendent. And so this kind of dichotomy created some real challenges in many of the programs, but it was particularly noteworthy in this program. The custodians were saddled with a whole bunch of new responsibilities. They were told, you've got to go out and help us monitor for pests. They set up monitoring stations. But they really went out there without complete training in IPM. So they implemented IPM programs that didn't have all of the right components. For example, they would go and sweep and vacuum and mop up ants without sealing the crack and crevice. Therefore, the ants would come back. And they would say, well, look, IPM doesn't work. They didn't realize they're not implementing the whole thing. So that was a struggle. There was very incomplete buy-in to this program and low satisfaction overall. And as I mentioned, the program basically tripled the cost because the pest management provider took it as an opportunity to increase the amount they charged. They did end up spending more time in the schools, but it still really was a program that struggled. How many of you have school districts like this one? This is called the Ignore School District. In this school district, I call it that because the central administration was completely detached and uninvolved from the pest management program at the building level. It was a very small school district, and they had had almost complete turnover in the administrative level at the time that I did the study. Actually, the director of buildings and grounds was knowledgeable about IPM, and he was new to the program. He wasn't there when the policy was passed, and he was saddled with all kinds of problems. And he had a long-term goal of kind of getting back to the IPM program, but at the time I did the study, they were completely detached from it. Now, this was kind of interesting because it created this power gap At the building level, the pest management provider was king of the IPM. He implemented the program that he wanted, and he called it an informal IPM program. This was a guy who hated record keeping, didn't want to keep records, and so he really minimized that. There was poor communication and really no education program for the custodians or anyone else in the school district. This was a guy who I followed around during my observations, and he applied an ant bait, and he recorded it as a cockroach material on the service form. So one of the things I did was the document analysis. I went back through all the service records for each of the school districts, and I really made me question how accurate those were. This program had a lot of pest problems and a very low level of satisfaction. There wasn't anybody that was really happy. And finally, the control school district is a really interesting case because it was a school district where there was a very centralized management structure. It was a medium-sized school district, and the central administrator in operations, he was in complete control. He had been the major author of the policy, and he also was in direct communication with the custodians in each building, the head custodians that were involved in implementing his version of an IPM program, which is very different, by the way, from the IPM Institute's version or the academic version. The central administrator first heard about IPM, and he heard about exclusion and sanitation, and he said, you know, if we could be really effective at excluding pests, keeping things clean, we could probably fire our routine pest management provider and save a whole bunch of money. So that was his goal. He did a very good job with educating the school staff, and there was just outstanding sanitation and exclusion in the school that I assessed, and there were no routine inspections, no monitoring in place at this, so that kind of violates what we would think of as an IPM program. The custodians were authorized to use pesticides, but on a case-by-case basis, the school district coordinator would have to approve that. And he wouldn't do that until they had done all the cleaning and everything else. This program had a very high level of satisfaction. The school administrator felt it met his goals. He had saved a lot of money. The school that I looked at didn't have the routine inspections, but about two-thirds of their schools still did. And they'd cut that service from a monthly service to a quarterly service. And so he was kind of gradually trying to phase them out. But he was satisfied, and I found very little evidence of pest problems, and people generally were happy with that program. Of course, I saw the one school. I didn't see all their schools. Finally, I just want to present some overall points here. And Dawn, how am I on time?
You have 5 minutes.
Okay, that's about perfect. Some of the factors that affected IPM implementation, and this is kind of across the board in the four school districts, what rose to the top as being most important. You hear this all the time. Buy-in is important to IPM adoption, implementation. I actually define buy-in as one of my concepts as a voluntary process of learning about and implementing school IPM. And buy-in could occur at many levels. And I found that people that were actively involved in those programs, that played some type of a role, they were knowledgeable and they tended to buy in, and those were more successful programs. So education and buy-in were closely linked. I mentioned really four very different organizational structures in those schools. That was really just by chance. I don't draw any conclusions about how, you know, a school district should be organized and how that affects IPM implementation. But I do want to point out that the different chains of command between the academic side of the teachers and the operations side of the custodians really caused some major problems, communication breakdown. In all four of the school districts I was in, the teachers had very little knowledge or information about IPM. And so in cases where those programs weren't being implemented effectively, there was a very low level of satisfaction. And it was hard to break down those barriers. We couldn't even get the teachers educated because they were interested in other things, not IPM. They didn't see it as their purview. Pest management provider communication. I would say this was one of the most important factors. In fact, the pest management providers in general really strongly influenced those programs as I'd say one of the most important components. I have a couple more slides about these last two, which is individual perceptions and education. First, I want to say that when I set out to do this, I never really thought that much about individual perceptions or that they would have a major impact. But when you go out and talk to people, people always will tell you their opinions, and they'll tell you what they think and how that affects what they do. So it really came out of the data itself. And I have two examples. The first is a positive impact of personal perceptions. In quotes on this slide and the next couple of slides are things that I had identified as concepts and going through the data. So I found in this example, first of all, low pest tolerance was a pretty common issue among all the school personnel that I had interviewed. And another common phenomenon I saw was the pest-clean connection. People felt if they had a pest in their area, a mouse, a cockroach, an ant, it didn't matter, it meant their area was dirty. So people would sometimes clean as a response to the pest being present, because people took a lot of pride in their area. And so this was what I saw as a positive impact of a couple of those perceptions that people had. Now on the negative side, that same low pest tolerance could be coupled with something called a pesticide mentality. I'm sure most of you have encountered this. This is the idea that if I have a pest, I must spray. It's what I've learned, it's what I grew up with, it's what I'm familiar with, and plus I want that instant gratification, you know, that feeling, you know, I'm in control. So when these two are coupled together, that can be a problem for the IPM program. And when IPM is perceived as vacuuming up ants instead of spraying them, and the ants come back because the crack isn't being sealed, that leads to this lack of pest management satisfaction, which I found also leads to things like covert pesticide use, product substitution, where we had people desperately spraying Windex just because they have that mentality, I have to spray something, so I'm going to spray my ants with Windex because they won't let me have the Raid. Really interesting. When you see this, you think, how long are those IPM programs going to be around? But it's not really a failure of IPM as we understand IPM. It's an incomplete implementation that makes those programs ineffective. What I called an IPM gap. So education was something that really facilitated IPM implementation, and it's really almost all we can do as outsiders is to really strive for this education. I mentioned this, that active involvement in the program increases buy-in, and also staff behaviors can be changed. They were changed through active involvement in the program, through education, constant reminding that this is something we're doing, we need to be checking this. And there was another interesting one that I found was I called pest management exchange. And in a couple of the school districts that were sort of centralized, when a teacher had a pest problem, they were refused service. We're not going to come out and do any treatment until, you know, we've seen what your classroom looks like. You need to clean it first. Well, what I found was actually two or three examples where when that was implemented very firmly, the next time those teachers called, they had done that cleaning before they made the call. So to me, that's an educational triumph. Two major sort of educational methods that were highly effective were demonstration and explaining why. And I think this won't be a surprise to anyone who's an extension, but two of the pest management providers out of the four school districts were very actively involved in educating people. Is that the 2 minute? And in those cases, when they could point to the fly maggots in the drain, people would get disgusted. They'd make the connection between the situation there and the pest being present. And when that could be done through a demonstration or an explanation, that was the most effective means of educating people in a way that would make them change their behavior. The implications of this for IPM educators, and many of you in the audience probably have your own ideas, maybe we can discuss that at the end of the session, but things that rose to the top for me, didn't really talk about adoption, but understanding the needs of adopters is critical in how you market those IPM programs. It's also critical to understanding that people's perspectives, their knowledge, their own priorities are going to influence how those programs get implemented. The key thing to me is that IPM adoption is not the same as IPM implementation. Those school districts had all implemented a policy that they believed was an IPM policy. They thought they were implementing IPM. If you go back to the map I showed at the beginning, a lot of those states that didn't have any dots certainly have active programs where people are educating and promoting about IPM adoption. But all those states with the red dots that have it mandated, I don't know how many of those states have gone back to really look at what the school districts look like, and I'd be real curious to find out. Perceptions shape the program, and this to me was one of my own personal revelations through all of this. And I don't really know how to address this other than to be aware of it and how you frame those education programs. Two perceptions we really need to address as educators are this low pest tolerance and pesticide mentality that were pretty prevalent in the school districts that I worked in. So education is critical. We need to close that IPM gap that I talked about and use these effective methods. And reaching the teachers is also critical. And I don't know who has some good ideas on how we're going to do that. I hope that we're going to get to that through our national PMSP, because I think that's important. I just end with this quote from our couple of esteemed entomologists. And I'm out of time. So thank you.